What's up and welcome to the Single Player Experience. As always, I'm your host Sebastian Maldonado, and today we're doing an indie game spotlight with one of my most anticipated upcoming games, Lucid. Instead of me just talking about why I'm looking forward to the game, I thought I'd up the ante. So my guest today is none other than the solo dev and creator of Lucid, Eric Manahan. In this episode, Eric is going to tell us all about Lucid and why you should be looking forward to the game. He's going to give his inspiration behind the game, and he's going to give advice to people who want to get into the gaming development field as a solo creator. We got all this and more coming right after the intro. DJ, start the intro, man. This is the Single Player Experience, the podcast that helps single player gamers manage their video game backlog. I'm your host, Sebastian Maldon, and my main quest is to help you manage your ever-growing video game backlog by letting you know which single-player games are worth your time and money so that you can have the best single-player experience. Now, without further ado, let's start the show. DJ, cut the beat. Ladies and gentlemen, joining me today is my very special guest. He is the solo dev extraordinaire, the creator of the dope game Lucid. This is Eric Manahan.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so glad to have you on the show. So can you introduce yourself to the audience?
Absolutely. First of all, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here. And to everybody out there listening, hello. My name is Eric Manahan. and I'm the, for all intents and purposes, the solo dev of Lucid.
Okay. So can you tell us a little bit about, like, how you got into game development?
Yeah. Oh, geez. Okay. So it's one of those things, like, let's see, do we talk where I like first played my first game is like, this is what I want to do, or I guess we'll fast forward and get rid of all the boring stuff. But I was, so I come from an architecture background. I studied to be an architect in college. And for anyone who doesn't know, like, architecture students have little to no social life. They like live in studio, and it was late one night, like 2 or 3 in the morning. I was just getting ready for a presentation, and I was like really burnt out. And I think it was Destructoid or something, but I came across a demo of what would become Iconoclast, that really awesome pixel 2D Metroidvania-ish. Mm-hmm. I came across the like early demo. This was like 2010 or something like that. And okay. So I play like the first level and a half, and I was like, good Lord, this is awesome. And I like look into it. I'm like, wait a minute. What? One dude made this? What? I had no idea it was even possible. And I reach out to him, and I was like, hey man, like, congrats. This is amazing. Like, how would you even go about doing this? And he gave me like advice, and just he's like using Construct 2 at the time, I think, and he just kind of pointed me in the right direction. And ever since then, I just did it as like a little side hobby, like little pixel art here, little coding there. I started in Game Maker, and then eventually I went to Unity. And about 2 years ago now, I picked back up Lucid, which was on hiatus for the longest time, and that's where we find ourselves today.
Dang. So all this was basically like a little advice and then a lot of like how to, really.
Yeah, kind of. It was like a lot of how to. Like, I lived and breathed the Game Maker forums and like YouTube. I would like digest and consume as much game making knowledge as I possibly could. Like, while I was in architecture offices, more time than I probably should have been, I was learning to code in pixel art and not doing architecture.
Do you find any correlation between the two, you know, architecture and the game development?
For sure. Like, I can't say I regret going to architecture school, because it really helped like train my brain and like how to think through design. And it really just trained myself like how to interpret how I want people to move through a space, how to feel, like shapes, color theory, like just a bunch of design knowledge that really transferred over to like making levels, like what's important, like there's a hierarchy visually. I mean, and it also doesn't hurt that I've been playing games since I was like 5 on the Super Nintendo or something like that. But yeah, it definitely transfers over. as much as I fell out of love with architecture, I really respect the process of it and really glad I did it.
Okay, so before we dive more into game development, we have a segment called Putting You on the Spot. So for every first-time guest, we ask, what is your top five games of all time? It's a tough one, isn't it?
That's like so unfair. my favorite games. Okay. All right. Okay. I'm going to have to put my own rules on this, and I'm going to try to not double up series-wise. Because that's... Oh, God damn it. All right. I'm going to let's start out the bat. You know what? Screw it. I'm going to merge. One slot's going to merge some. So one slot's going to be A Link to the Past, Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask. That's like one little nugget right there.
Okay.
Actually, Zelda, Link to the Past is like one of the first games. When I actually got my own SNES when I was a kid, it came bundled with that. And I know every pixel of that map, light and dark. Like, oh God, I played the ever-living crap out of that game. I love it. And likewise for the other two.
So do you think that's the best Zelda game of all time?
I don't. I think it is like the granddaddy of what made, what they ran with. Like they found out what worked and they ran with it and they perfected the formula a little bit later. And obviously they've departed from that with Breath of the Wild, but I think it really set the stage for like what a Zelda game is.
Okay.
There's some things they could have done better, but like it's hard doing something for the first time and limitations, and the industry was still pretty young back then, but it would be hard for me to say it's the best Zelda, but I think it's one of the best for sure.
Okay, so it's in your top five. So what's number four then?
Okay, so my four slot. Oh, gotta go Mega Man X. Friggin' love Mega Man X, man. Another Capcom, like at the Capcom at the height of their powers, and pretty much maybe like X1, 2, F, and 4 are my favorite X's. 3 is great, but meh. and then pretty much it just nosedives after 4, in my opinion. So yeah, Mega Man X, that little chunk series, like the whole rock, paper, scissor mechanic, the stages, the design, like the run and gunness of it, the finding all the hidden power-ups and stuff. Like, I love that game. I used to draw like my own Mavericks as a kid and try to like make my own animal.
You were really into it. You really were.
Oh, dude, I was super into it. Okay.
That's a solid list so far, though.
So far, so good. It's getting harder. Okay, three. Oh, how could I? Super Metroid is, again, another grandmommy what Metroid would become. But Super Metroid, I remember I went to a GameStop and I traded in, I forget what I traded in, but I traded in like two pissant games for a game that I had never heard of and I knew nothing about, and it was just Super Metroid. I'm like, that looks cool. That's a cool dude in a really cool armor. And I'd take it home and it was late, and it was like back in the day when like trading in games was like really new, and it was like, whoa. Mm-hmm. And I went home. It was like I rode my bike home. It was late in the summer, and it was like all the lights are out, and I just remember that intro happening, and oh my God, that like that slow burn where like the station's all blacked out and all the bodies are on the floor and there's only that Metroid there and making that squeaky, and then the sound hits. Oh my God, I get goosebumps just thinking of it. But yeah,
the sound design was next level in that game.
Ooh wee, yes sir.
So did you enjoy Metroid Dread?
I did like Metroid Dread. It was like a really solid Metroid, but I was mildly disappointed because every time I played it with a buddy, and like we've noticed every single time, like you go ahead, you think you'd like completed something, you beat a boss, something, you got an item, we would try to backtrack and we would never be rewarded for it. It was very surprisingly linear, but I know there's like speed running and like changing courses, but I'm a pretty knowledgeable Metroid player, and like it wasn't, I couldn't find anything secret. I was not rewarded for going backtracking like at all. And I was pretty bummed out about that. But Samus has never had so much swag, and the animations were amazing. That shot of her, I think it was like the first boss, like the scorpion looking thing where like it's dead. It then like it shifts focus to her in the back, and she's like walking kind of like whatever, and like just kind of point. It was like so badass. I'm like, oh my God. So yeah, that game is really awesome, but I still want more freedom. I want freedom.
Okay, I understand that. I can get that completely. So you were saying number two.
Oh, number two. Oh, it's I'm going to jump ahead, and it's real. I don't think it's much a surprise to anybody nowadays, but the FromSoft cattle, like almost anything Dark Souls, Bloodborne, like the FromSoft Dark Souls series, I love all of them, but oddly enough, my favorite one is Sekiro. I love Sekiro.
Is it the fast-paced movement?
Yeah, it's the you can dictate the pace of the fight. It is the twitch reactions. It's almost like it's more of a rhythm game than anything else. Like it's the enemy designs, it's the world. Like I just felt like if I'm playing a game and if you master the mechanics, you can just tear through almost anything at any time. Like I would just feel like a god, even like at low level, I could just like mow through levels just because I know the game so well. It's a really good feeling. Instead of like the grindy, like, oh, I can now kill you in two shots instead of three. I beat you because I know this game better. Like I like that better.
I'm really surprised that that was like your number one From Software game. Have you played Elden Ring yet?
Yes, I have. Sure have. I really, really enjoyed Elden Ring, but I remember being, I was frustrated more often than I would have liked.
Okay.
And it was for like weird, stupid reasons. And it's like nitpicky stuff, but it all started to stack up. And I'm like, why would it do this? Stupid stuff. Like, why does FromSoft, or at least Elden Ring, they prioritize your interacting button? Like, they prioritize people's messages on the ground over...
Oh, I don't like that at all.
...in-world. So, some freaking jabroni... I remember there's this pit you fall on. Like, there's these roots in, like, the mine or something. And I saw some stuff, and I went down there, and all of a sudden it was, like, that sarcophagus snake thing. And, I didn't have any healings. I was like, crap. And I'm trying to get out. And there's only one freaking ladder. And some jerk put like a bunch of messages there. So I couldn't activate the climb animation. I kept reading his stupid message.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah, man. And it was just stuff like that. And I don't know. It is a leap forward in the world, open world genre. Like it is does so many things so right. And then it does something so wrong that I just want like blood boiling. And I was just like, why would you do this? I'm like hot and cold on Elden Ring.
Okay. I can get that. I get that. So number one game of all time for you.
Oh my God.
I know, limiting it down to one. That's so hard.
Okay, I should say that this list has not been ordered. However,
okay,
The last spot, I'm gonna go with. Damn it! okay, it's between two.
Okay, what's the two then?
So, and I think it's gonna be one and not the other because I should have slotted it in. You know, that's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna slot Breath of the Wild in with the other Zelda. I thought that's another not perfect Zelda, but I have not felt that like kid finding stuff, like discovering stuff on the playground and all these weird little, everywhere I went was a surprise. Like I haven't felt that way in years when I played that game. I took a week off of work to play it nonstop and I still didn't beat it in a week and I was loving every second of it. So that's one. And then the other one, I'm going to give it to another game that took me by surprise how much I loved it. It was like amazingly, the mechanics are amazing. The controls are amazing. The story is amazing. Like the meta-ness of it is amazing. And the game is Hades.
Oh, I love Hades. Absolutely love Hades.
Hades is so goddamn dope. It's unfair. It's so good. Like, oh my God, the gameplay loop was so good. The combination of the boons, the whole dying, the way they tied dying into the story, into the roguelike was
so good.
Genius.
So good.
So good. Every weapon's viable. It's just so good. It was one of those, this is a video game. It felt video gamey. I love the Twitch reactions. I love the arena-ness. I love games that do, I think it's the Doom modular. I could be misremembering, but it's this design type where you just kind of make a bunch of modular enemies, and then mm-hmm. the real trick is combining those pieces in a arena, and so the different environments plus the specific enemies you put in them really dynamically change the experience. A corridor maybe mm-hmm. really difficult if you have a bunch of long range zoners, but if you have in a big arena, they're easy peasy, something like that. But I loved that game, man. So I'm gonna go with Hades.
I love Hades a lot. I love the voice acting in it. I think the combat, like you said, there is no bad weapon, even though yes. there might not be even though there's not I might get a weapon every now and then that I'm okay, this is not my favorite.
Right.
Maybe but other than that, it's all the power-ups feel really well thought out. All the, especially the later power-ups that you get later in the game with I can't remember the ice god's name. It was start with a D. Was it Diameter?
Diameter? Yeah.
Diameter, yeah.
Yeah.
I got her so late through playing that game. I think it was 40 hours into playing that, and then wow. it introduced another mechanic for me, and I was oh, wow, I love this.
Yep. She was the one that could... There was this thing where whenever you dash, it would make an ice laser. Is that one?
Yeah, you instead of your B move, which would basically send out those crystals, the homing crystal. Yeah, it would send out the laser, and you can make the lasers intersect depending on how you placed them. It was so good. Yeah. So good.
Yeah, it becomes a weird tower defense
mm-hmm.
thing. Oh, yeah. That's the build variety. It was, and you could do it on the fly. It was just so good. Oh my God. Yeah. I really love Hades. That's a good one.
I understand why. I love Supergiant games in general, but Hades just caused special place in my heart, and it did not let go.
Yeah. I think they really hit they cracked the code, because every one of their games is I really love mm-hmm. Transistor. Bastion's great. Pyre is weird, but also just a solid game. But this mm-hmm. one, they really kind of they broke into, I guess, the mainstream, if you want to call it that. But they found a really large audience with that one.
Oh, yeah, it is that damn good.
Yeah, man.
Hades was cracked for me.
It really was. I would be working, and on my lunch break, I would be like, I mm-hmm. can get a run or two in. And then four in, I'm an hour after my break. I'm fuck. I gotta get my break.
It is so good. It is so good. But we can talk about Hades all day. But let's get into the topic of the show. Let's talk about your game, Lucid.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Yeah. How would you describe that game for the audience?
Okay. It's an amalgamation of... It's a love letter to all my favorite games growing up. It's there's so many pieces of other games in there. But I would say the largest influences are... Actually, Super Metroid, Mega Man X, Zelda,
okay,
Hades, Dark Souls, and oddly enough, Celeste.
I love Celeste.
Yeah, man. That was another game that I really, really enjoyed. If your list was six slots, it would have made that one. But Celeste, I've been affectionately calling Lucid the first Celestoidvania. It's
that's sweet. That's a dope. You should really market that. That was really cool. That's a dope tagline.
Thanks, man. I've been kind of running with it ever since PAX East. I've been just kind of dropping it, and hopefully it takes off with that. But yeah, man. So Lucid, way back when, started off as a really traditional Metroidvania. When I was first learning coding, and the long and short of that story is I developed this game for a long time, and then I went on hiatus. It was just all consuming, and I'm like, I got to not do this. I have to focus on other things. Years go by, and then me and my fiance are walking the dog, and she just says, "Whatever happened to Lucid?" I'm like, "I don't know." She's like, "You were so happy. I loved it. You should continue." And I'm like, all right. You know, I've been thinking about picking up Unity. Like, maybe what better way to learn Unity? I'll like port over the game and figure it out. So I did that. And then this is a little bit after I had played Celeste. And me and my Discord, I have the shower thoughts. It's like a meme. All my ideas are shower thoughts. I'm in the shower and I have a shower thought. And also like, oh my God, combined the Metroid game with Celeste mobility, the node traversal, and that just a million synapses fired, and like I ran with that, and that's kind of like where I expanded Lucid into what it's become today.
That's really dope. That's really cool. I feel like I'm the same way in the sense that all my favorite, like, all my best creative ideas come in the shower. Yeah. So I get it completely. It is just that it's that time to where you really zone out or really focus in on something that maybe you were too busy to actually hone in on. It's that
absolutely.
Kind of feeling, you know?
Yeah. It's like too many like micro distractions taking away from your thoughts, and like they all just melt away in the steam and you can see things clearly, oddly enough.
It is. It's almost like a level of zen that you couldn't accomplish anywhere else but the shower.
Yeah, man. I mean, a close second is the throne, really close to the shower.
Yeah.
But shower is definitely numero uno.
Yeah, I understand that completely. So you talked about a lot of your inspirations with Lucid. You kind of hinted at the direction and what made you create this game, but how did you really get the gameplay to be this tight?
Oh, that I'm probably going to have to... I knew from day one I wanted those tight controls of like a Mega Man X, those old school platformers. Just like, it felt like... Super Smash... I am a huge, huge Super Smash Brothers fan.
Who's your character? Who you play as?
Right now in Ultimate, I play Captain Falcon if I'm feeling saucy. And if I want to win on Wi-Fi, because Wi-Fi is hot fucking garbage, I'll play Samus. I've always loved Samus, but I know no one wants to play a Samus online. It's annoying, but I'll do it if I got to win. Got to do it. Go for the W.
So let's talk about Lucid a little bit more. What do you feel like are some challenges that you had in making this game in 2022 as a solo developer?
So... let's see. I think the biggest challenge I face is my own limitations as like a programmer. I'm self-taught and I can do a lot of the stuff I want to do, I can do, but I like just bang my head against the wall until it works, where I'm sure there's other people that can just like do it blindfolded. Mm-hmm. So I would say the hardest part of developing Lucid would be trying to find the balance of scope, time, capabilities, and like finding the right balance and like making sure it works in as a whole, like holistically, but also not be lackluster. But I do know that even though I am I've been a solo dev for a long time, I think I'm slowly growing some like outside assistance, like some contracted help.
Okay.
So I'll be having like hopefully an extra programmer soon, maybe even another pixel artist. I have a buddy helping me fill in the gaps with some of the story. Two amazing musicians have been helping me with some tracks here and there. Andrew Black and my fiance, actually, they've been doing a bunch of awesome work in that front. So I've slowly been growing out the team over the 2 years. But,
okay.
Yeah, so all the things that have been something I've had to struggle with, I can soon focus on all of my strengths entirely, and it'll just make devving that much easier.
That's so cool. So it's slowly but surely you're becoming a Nick Fury who's collecting these Avengers, basically.
Yeah, man. Oh, I like that. yeah, man. I'm assembling a team.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But no, that's really cool. So how did you go about like working as a developer, and especially, you know, for the most part, you're still solo. So how do you go about decision making? How's that process? Do you feel like you have like a concrete idea of, okay, this is the direction we're going in? Or do you also feel like sometimes you're maybe like, I'll try this out and see kind of how it plays out? And is it more trial and error sort of thing?
It's definitely always trial and error. But that's to say, I like plan a lot. Coming from an architectural background, like you plan, you don't just go up to a site and start building. Like you draw it out, you got to draw, set everything out. You got to have schedules. You have to get the material. You have to like have everything on paper before you break ground, ideally.
Okay.
And that's kind of how I approach game design, where I make a very thorough game doc. I write out all the abilities I'd like in there, the gameplay loop. I have the story. I've written the story in like giant broad strokes with a lot of the in-between. I've been creating this world of lore, like Dark Souls amount of lore, for years. And so it's all just like kind of like laid out on digital paper. And so it gives me a really good concrete, like, this is what I'm doing today. And then the trial and error part comes when I've made it. And then I see, is it, the most important thing is it fun? And if it's fun, does it make sense? And like, does it fit in the world? And do all the mechanics, is it doing something that someone's already doing, in the sense like overlapping abilities? Like if two things are doing the same thing, like it's unnecessary, like trim the fat. So everything has to be unique. It has to have a purpose. It has to fit in the story. A very holistic, like everything needs to tie and work together.
That makes complete sense. So when you're creating everything, do you feel like a lot of the times, like, this is my vision, I actually get to see my vision come to real life? Or do you feel like...
Absolutely.
How does that make you feel? I bet that's like a huge sense of accomplishment there.
It's pretty addicting. I would consider myself like a creative, like most of my life. I've always been kind of into the artistic stuff. I love drawing. I like make music, all that stuff. So seeing, I like being able to see a physical thing when I'm done making it. But to your question, it's definitely an awesome feeling. I have this, my fiance, she works in another room, but I have this tick when I'm feeling myself, or I did something, I like rub my hands like like that. And I'll do that once, not knowing it, and then I'll hear in the distance like her do it. I'm like, all right.
That's fun. I saw a lot of the influences of a lot of the games you mentioned before, but this feels like its own original thing. It feels fresh. It feels like it has those influences, but then you taken some of the best parts about that, made it your own, and then came up with this really original lore, storyline, and also original design around that. And I'm like, first of all, I commend you for that. And second of all, I want to say, like, how big of an undertaking is that?
Oh, man. Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a big undertaking, for sure. It's kind of a risk to even try that sometimes, because sometimes what's hot right now or familiar sells much easier. And trying to make something new that maybe takes time to understand is less safe. But I wanted to make something very its own, and you know, like a lot of homages, like all my favorites, like they're the greats for a reason. And I wanted to try to take a stab at it and like make my own take on it. But to your point, it was pretty difficult making something that was unique with so much great stories. Yeah, with so much great inspiration. It's really hard to like I'll make something, and then like a year later I'll see something that's like eerily similar to it, and I'll be like, God, fuck. Fuck. And I'll have to like go back and I'll tweak it, because I want it to be its own thing. But it's a combination of like real world inspiration, like the Sentinels are inspired by like Japanese Shinto and Toltec, like I'm sure they were kind of new to me when I found it, but some people already know what the Toltec culture was. But that's one thing. But then also I made in-world creatures, in-world mythology, in-world lore. There's like a creation myth that's heavily influenced by, I don't even want to really say it right
yet. No, don't spoil anything.
Because I don't want to spoil anything, it. But I'm sure somebody out there will be like, wait a minute. And they'll, think they'll figure out what's the huge inspiration of the creation myth. And like, they'll be able to piece together. But I was a huge Vativedia guy, like that whole Dark Souls, that lore community. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to attempt to make that for Lucid. And a lot of environmental storytelling, a lot of characters. It's like an in-between, like I hope for a happy medium of Dark Souls ambiguity and Zelda like lore and NPC villages, sort of in between where it's not too nebulous, but not too hand-holdy.
Okay. Okay. And I think that really shows in the, especially with what we've seen in the game so far. So I commend you for that. I got to ask you, like, the pixel art style is absolutely gorgeous. And I know you're a big fan of pixel art games because I'm like, look at your top five list. Was that always the design though? Did you go into a game thinking like, I'm going to make a pixel art game like this?
Yes. Yes and no. I definitely always knew it was going to be pixel art. But if you look on my Instagram, if you go to the bottom, you'll see just how much it's changed. And Owen's the main character you play as. Mm-hmm. He's been through, maybe like six updates. originally he was, when I was first starting out, I bit off way too much I was capable of. I was trying to make like Marvel versus Capcom, like Darkstalkers level sprites. Oh, wow. And like, it took me a week to do one idle animation. I was like, all right, scale it back. And then it kind of turned into this hyperlight drifter kind of aesthetic, side scrollery thing. And it ran with that for a while. And then I just, over time, I was practicing pixel art. And eventually I kind of found my own little style.
For sure. So what advice would you give to people who want to get in the gaming development field as a solo creator?
That is a good question.
If you were going back in time, and what would you tell yourself?
I guess I would tell myself it's such a big question because it's such a big medium. Like, game design is my favorite thing in the world because it's like the meeting of every artistic medium, in my opinion, or maybe many people's opinion. Like, it's music, it's coding, it's like art, design, architecture, like psychological, looks, lore, story, cinematic, it's everything you think of it, it's in a video game. So where to begin? I guess I would say, what about game design do you like? What is it, what about it draws you to playing games? Whatever that thing is, try to master that. Like, dive fully into that, learn everything there possibly is, and then when you think there's nothing else that you can possibly learn, like, expand and then move on to the next thing you love. Because I think if you can specialize in something, it literally makes you the word special. And eventually, in enough time, you become the jack of all trades. But you, at least knowing how all the pieces come together, I think is very helpful. I can't really think of anything else. I mean, I guess when it comes to designing a game, find the fun. I heard that somewhere, and it's so true. I remember playing around, and like, it was just, I can distinctly remember the moment where I was moving a character around. And then all of a sudden it became fun, and I found the fun, and it was the Celeste thing, and it felt good. It was fun, and I ran with it and expanded it. So if you're making a game, whatever your idea is, if it's not working, like, keep trying, like, find the fun. Like, sometimes an idea will change and evolve and it'll get there. But just have fun and find the fun.
Okay. Is there any programs, like specific programs, you would recommend to newcomers?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a much easier question.
Maybe I should have narrowed it down a little bit.
Yeah, that one's, I can do that in a heartbeat. So, Lucid, I know for me, as a 2D game, the three programs I use, like, for the most part, is I use Unity, I use, and Aceprite, A-Sprite's a pixel art program for, it's like specialized in animating and pixel art. I cannot recommend A-Sprite enough. I mean, I feel like I should be getting commissions at this point because I only sing its praise. It's awesome if you want to learn pixel art. And then I also use Photoshop like a little bit here and there for small touch-ups or like promo art and stuff like that. But yeah, that's kind of the trinity I roll with.
Okay, okay. So which out of those three, which one do you feel like was the biggest challenge to learn about?
Definitely Unity.
Okay.
I learned Photoshop in school. A-Sprite is like sort of like Photoshop, but for pixel art. And so like those were very much quicker for me to pick up. But Unity is so deep. It's like a mile long and 200 miles deep. And I'm still learning things. Still, I'm by no means a master, but I can definitely get the job. What I need to do, I can get done, but there's still so much to learn.
Okay, okay. If you were like, let's say you're the big CEO of like this big tech company and you're coming out with like a new game engine studio that's supposed to like revolutionize 2D gaming, what are some aspects you would put into it?
Ooh.
I know I hit you with a curveball there, but
I like it. Let's see if I could have my like a 2D engine like exclusive type of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Or even if you were creating the next Unity, what would you do with it?
I guess I would. It would be great if. So I'm not the biggest fan of the what's it called, visual coding or like node-based coding. Mm-hmm. I think it's great for what it is trying to do. But it would be really, I think this is probably heresy to some people, but if there was a way to even, because GameMaker has GML, which is like this code language that is kind of this shorthand for actual coding, mm-hmm. and Unity uses C#. If this hypothetical engine could somehow use even like a simplified, easier to understand, I guess lower the bar for incomers, that would be helpful.
Okay. But almost like a plug and place method as opposed to like,
yeah, like I guess instead of like having to instantiate something, like you have to make all these, like you have to, I feel like I have to copy and paste like a bunch of stuff a whole bunch of times to instantiate mm-hmm. a variable and then get the component, yada yada. It'd be cool if there was like shortcuts like in this coding language that'd be like, I'm making this and it should automatically do this and I don't need to code it. Like just do it and then tell, if I don't want it to happen, I will tell it not to.
Okay.
Instead of me having to tell it to do it because it's like, no, like, duh, it should do that. It's super, I don't know, like nitpicky. And I'm sure some coders out there are like, what the hell is this guy talking about? But when I was a newcomer and like trying to figure it all out, it wasn't as intuitive as I would have liked. Like now it's like obvious, but at the time it was a little bit of a headache.
I mean, let's be real here. It is like learning a language.
Yeah, and I am dog shit at learning languages.
So I'm like, yeah, the barrier of like the ease of entry could be a lot easier.
Yeah. And then I guess I lucked out because I did that with the GameMaker side. But mm-hmm. If they could do some like baby steps and then you can grow into full C#, just kind of like transitional period a little bit. Maybe that would help. I don't really know.
Eric, thank you so much for being on the show. I really got to ask you one last question before you go, though.
Bring it on.
All right. So I know you're mixing everything you got going on in life, whether it be game development, whether it be playing games, hanging out with your loved ones. How do you balance it all?
Ooh, man, hit me with a hard, real question.
I have to hit you with a 1-2 punch before you go, man.
Jesus, man. Well, I guess before, first of all, thanks for having me. This has been a blast. And then how do I balance it all? I don't know if I don't know if I do, my friend. I worry and question how tunnel vision I become and how much I work. And I do my best to reel it in. I am notorious and infamous for working too hard, too much, too long. But I've been getting much better at like taking a break, going for a walk, drinking water, you know, putting the computer down, hanging out with friends mm-hmm. and family. a schedule helps, and also a dog. A dog really helps, and a timer.
Man, same here.
Yeah, man. Like, the dog's like a living timer where, like, they come up and they look at you and they're all cute and like, what's up, buddy? And they're just like, I gotta go outside. Like, can you wait? And they're like, no, right now. I'm like, okay, let's go for a walk right now. So, yeah, the dog and my fiance really helped me not get, you know, too tunnel vision, pull me out. And like, it's more beneficial than not. Helps clear my head. And also, they don't mean to, but they give me inspiration like all the time. They'll just say or do something or take me somewhere and I'll see something and it inspires me with an idea that I can take back later. And it definitely helps.
It's okay. That's good. That's good. At least you found the balance and you have other things and people to help you, like, when you don't find the balance, you know?
Yes. Yes. If I were left to my own devices, I would just wither away and just fuse to my couch and my fingers will just fuse to the keyboard. Like, oh my God.
So, okay. I lied. Well, I got a couple more follow-up questions now.
Yes.
Based on what you said now. Well, okay. So tell us a little more about the dog. That's what we really want to know.
Zoe is the best girl in the world. She is an angel from above, and she can do no wrong.
Okay, good.
Those are just facts. I'm just giving you science facts right now.
Okay.
Yeah, I love that little dog. She's very cute. She's this little white border collie, like Amstaff terrier mix, and she thinks she's like 200 pounds. She's only like 20 pounds. Oh man, just the other day, we're on one of those nature walks, and she's like acting kind of funky, like right over the ridge, just over this hill. Like, we can't really see what's over the hill. We can see her right at the cusp. I'm like, what is she doing? She's got this weird position. We keep walking ahead, and she's playing with a coyote. And we're like,
what?
We freak out. We're trying to get her back. It becomes this whole ordeal of like, she's like, what's the problem? She's all sad. And the coyote is gigantic, dude. I've never been that close. I was like, maybe like 25, 30 feet away from this coyote. This thing was a table. And it like started following us. Like immediately we tried to yell and make it go away. We start going back to the car. We're like 20 minutes into this walk and it starts following us and starts barking at us as we're trying to get to the car for like a 15 more minute walk until we got closer and it left eventually, but it was scary. And she was like, what's the problem? I want to play. And that's what I get for going outside. That's why I stay inside.
That's funny. That's funny. Yeah. My dog is kind of like that too. I have a Labradoodle.
Boy or girl?
And boy, his name is Biscuit.
Yes,
Biscuit the Labradoodle.
That is a like S tier dog name. That's awesome, man. How long have you had Biscuit?
Biscuit's about to be 2 years old. So we got him whenever he was about 4 weeks old. So for unfortunately, like it was a rescue, and the mom had passed away. So we kind of jumped in, and Biscuit's been with us ever since.
That's awesome, man. Ugh, that's so nice to hear. You're like melting my heart. Just so cute.
I'll have to send you pictures of Biscuit, but
we'll do a trade. I'll trade one for you, one of mine, one for yours, for sure.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, like Biscuit, like doing the podcast and everything, he'll jump in my lap and like basically look into the microphone like he's gonna have his words next.
He's like, that a treat? That for me?
Yeah.
Eat that? Yeah. Like, no, don't eat that.
Yeah, for real. But no, yeah. So when are we going to see the dog in the game? When are we going to see the dog in Lucid?
So there are a few characters that are like stand-ins for friends and family of mine.
Mm-hmm.
The Scribe is one. He's a buddy of mine. But then there's these two other characters. They're called Cheru and Goguma. And they are the stand-ins for Una, my fiance, and Zoe, our dog. And little secret time, Goguma is Korean for sweet potato. And sweet potato is Zoe's nickname that her mom gave Zoe. So that's why.
Sweet. That's really sweet. That's a cool little Easter egg.
Yeah. So only your listeners know that little tidbit right now.
Okay, we'll keep it on the low line. That's so dope. So, man, we are all out of time. I know you got to get back to it. I know it's getting late over there. So before we go, where can the people find you?
Oh man, I always forget that this is a thing. thank you for everyone who stuck around this long. I hope you had fun. I know I had fun with you, man. It was a good time. Thanks for having me. But if people could go to Steam and look up Lucid and wishlist Lucid, that would mean the absolute world to me. Like, I can't explain how helpful it is and how much it's necessary as a small indie like myself. Please and thank you times a million. But yeah, other than that, if that's not your thing, Instagram is where I'll post all my work for the Matt Black Studio. That's the studio moniker I've been working under. We also have a Discord community up to, it's growing and it's super friendly. I couldn't be more proud of it. So yeah, that's where you can find me.
So everyone, I'll be including links for Lucid in the description of the podcast. So be on the lookout for that as well.
I'm super down to come back and talk more nerd stuff with you.
That sounds great, Eric. I'm glad to have you on the podcast again, and I'll catch you in the next one.
Thanks again. Bye, everybody.
So that's a wrap for today's show. I want to give a special shout out to Eric Manahan for being on the show today. I also want to remind you that if you have any questions you'd like to be featured on the show, you can write those in at thepronerdreport.com/the contact page. You can also write in at our Single Player Experience Discord server. The Single Player Experience Discord server is also a great place to meet other single player gamers and to talk about good single player game experiences that you've had lately. We also would like to give you feedback on your video game backlog list. So, if you are interested in joining that Discord server, the link to join is in the show notes. I want to thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I hope you stay safe and stay gaming, and I hope to catch you in the next one. Peace.